This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
The Commerce and Energy Committee will come to order. First, we'd like to welcome everyone online and in the committee room. We have to apologize. About half of us were tied up in the Judiciary Committee, so we started a little bit late, but I see we're all here now. First, we'll ask the pages to please introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, and where you're planning to go next year.
I'm Jade Evans. I'm from Pierre, and next year I plan on going to SDSU for biology.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Sabrina Kintz. I'm also from Pierre, and I plan to go to University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, next year to study environmental science.
Okay, thank you. We will remind everyone, if you have handouts for the committee, to please use the pages. Remind you to please turn off your cell phones. The penalty in this committee is jerky for the committee, so we probably would prefer not to do that. And then we will ask the secretary to please call the roll.
Senator Curd.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Monroe.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
Nostrup.
Here.
Schoenbeck or Jensen?
Here.
Stalzer?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, next action will be approval of the minutes. Do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
A second? Okay. Second. We have a motion from Senator Jensen, seconded by Senator Kennedy. All in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Woo. Minutes approved. The gavel was falling apart there. I had to screw it back together this morning. Okay, we'll remind anyone testifying that they need to sign in at the podium in the back. And lobbyists, make sure your badges are available and visible to the committee. We also would remind you to address all questions and answers through the chair. And with that, we will move to the first bill on the agenda this morning. I guess I will first announce that Senate Bill 101 establish certain provisions regarding out-of-state businesses that provide disaster or emergency-related work is being deferred at the request of the sponsor. Apparently, they're working on an amendment that maybe we'll get them together when they get here. Okay, with that, we now move to Senate Bill 95 to establish standards regarding operation of certain inflatable amusement devices. With that, do we have a proponent who can explain what that means? Well, you did a pretty good job Saturday morning.
Did I? Good morning, Mr. Chair. Senator Chris Langer from District 25 in Del Rapids. I bring to you Senate Bill 95. I would say this is a consumer protection bill that will protect my granddaughter, hopefully, from anything. And with that, I'm going to let somebody that knows a lot more about this speak to it.
Good morning.
Good morning, Senator Nostrup.
Yeah, thanks for having me. David Nostrup from Aberdeen, and I asked Senator Langer to introduce this bill because of a situation I saw this last, I guess it was summer or fall, and I'll tell you that story and then I'll go into a few other things. So I have two kids that are, or three kids, but two twins that are seven, and then a son that's four, and so we go to a lot of festivals and events that have inflatables, and we were at an event, and at this place, they had no supervision. Kids were jumping on the side of the slide. It was a bounce house with a slide attached, and there was an arch at the bottom of the slide, and a girl about, well, actually, she was in the same class as my girls, and she was messing around on this arch, and she kind of overshot it, and thankfully she tucked underneath it, and so she landed on the slide. But if she would have gone over it, she would have landed on a concrete floor, which thankfully she did not. But the story could have been a lot worse than what I just told you, and I think having the correct supervision the right padding at the entrances and exits would make sure that those types of situations aren't impossible if the operator is supervising it like they should be. And just to give you a little background on also why I brought the bill, or had Senator Langer bring the bill, is my family, we've been in the family entertainment center business for about just over 24 years, so I understand this industry really well. We don't have inflatables. We don't plan to have inflatables. And part of that experience that I've had, I've been on three industry organization committees, or an organization in the industry on three of their committees, and one of them, the most recent one, is risk management. So I understand this issue very well. And I was talking to an industry insurance representative recently, and they said 90%, I think it was roughly 90% of their insurance claims that come in accuse the operator of lack of supervision. And so a supervision is making sure you have, you don't have too many kids jumping, you don't have an adult jumping with younger kids, things like that. And then what the bill does is it ties it to the state law to ASTM standards, which is the American Society of Testing and Material Standards, which is written by suppliers, regulators, operators. They all meet, I think, twice a year. They talk about this and say, what are the best practices from manufacturing, operating, maintenance, all that. And then they establish the standard. And we're actually, in Senate Bill 95, we're pointing to the 2010 version. I think that's appropriate for South Dakota. There is a more recent version. And that one, I think it's either 2017 or 18, and it's 34 pages. And I just think that's too much for South Dakota. The 2010 one is 4 pages long, and we're just addressing the maintenance and operation of it, pointing to that part of the standard. So I just ask that you have a favorable support of Senate Bill 95, and just that we can make South Dakota safer for all kids, and including my own. So I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have additional proponents? Okay, one more time for additional proponents. Seeing none, do we have any opponents? Please come to the chair. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Janine Maskovich, and I am an owner of a bounce house inflatable center here in Pierre. Excuse me. And when this bill was brought up to me, I was immediately concerned about costs that are going to go into any type of regulation that comes in for business owners. As a bounce house center, it's not a high revenue business. So it's cost going out is definitely something that scares us right off the top. We do take precautions at our center, and any center that I've been to that does have padded flooring and things as such. But what we cannot control is children and adults alike that won't follow rules. We have rules posted all over. We have staff that are all over. And if a kid is climbing on the side, you know, they get in trouble, they blow whistles, they get time out, things like that. But putting regulations on that, I don't think it's still not going to stop that child from climbing on something that they're not supposed to. Just at a general park in your city, you drive by and you can see kids standing on top of those slides. It happens. It's just what kids do. But yeah, we have regulations at parks, just like what I'm assuming is coming forward with this. The little bit of research that I was able to get my hands on just comes down to kids are kids. So whether you have rules posted or you have people standing there watching them, accidents are still going to happen. So
that's all I have for you.
Okay, thank you. Are there additional opponents? Additional opponent testimony? Okay, seeing none, we will allow a brief rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a small business owner, I understand regulation, and I'm opposed to regulation, generally speaking. But like I said, the situation I saw this last fall, the difference in that situation, besides luck, would be supervision. And this is really minimal regulation. If people are operating their businesses the correct way, they are supervising already. They have the supervision in place. There are other operators that they set up their inflatables at houses or whatever, and they drop them off, and they come and pick them up at the end of the event. And I've been to these events, and they don't have any supervision. And I understand passing a law doesn't change the world and make everybody safe and nobody can get hurt. But by establishing a basic standard, which this bill does, and having supervision required, will help improve that chance of nobody getting hurt. Is it a guarantee? No, I can't give you a guarantee. But it will reduce the chance of injuries. I do know that it will reduce the chance. So thank you, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. Okay, we will now move to committee questions. Are there any questions of either? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my daughter rents one of these things about every year for my grandsons. According to this, if she doesn't comply with this statute, she can be arrested and prosecuted for first-class misdemeanor.
Thank you. I'm assuming that question is to me. How I read the bill, it's not the renter, it's the operator of the inflatable, the person that has the business.
Now, would you please identify yourself again for the benefit of
David Northrup.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, sir. In Section 1, it states, no person who owns or leases an inflatable amusement device. So according to this bill, my daughter, when she leases these inflatable amusement devices, if she allows the neighbor kids and friends of the family to come and play on this, if she doesn't comply with this statute, she could be prosecuted for a first-class misdemeanor, according to the way the bill reads, correct?
Go ahead.
Thank you. David Northrup. A prosecutor could probably make that argument, and if the committee wants to clarify it, you could just say any person who owns an inflatable, scratch that, or leases.
Any follow-up, Senator Nelson? Any additional community questions? Senator Kennedy?
Thank you. Mr. Northrup, you've referenced the American Society of Testing and Materials standard and a specific standard. Who enforces those standards? Does anyone?
It depends. In South Dakota, we've used the standard a few years ago in an amusement safety bill. So it depends how the legislation is written. When they reference the ASTM standards, it could be the state. There's other states in our country that they have departments that don't just enforce the state law, but also the ASTM standards because it's referenced in their state law. The industry, these are held up as best practices. So as far as I'm aware, ASTM organization doesn't have people that go out and say you're violating ASTM standard F2374-10, but it'd be how, like in this case, the bill is written, so the attorney general or state's attorney, or if something happened, somebody could sue somebody civilly, and they could point to this as well.
Follow up.
If I were going to try to find that standard so I could read it, is that something that's generally available to the public, or do you have to buy something from ASTM in order to even read what the standard is?
I know that in some cases you have to purchase it. I don't know if it's publicly available. We're a member of an organization that I just asked for it, and they provided it, but I don't know if it's, I mean, anybody can get it. I just don't know if you can get it for free or not.
Okay.
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. And one final follow-up, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Section, I guess it's subpart 2 of Section 1 of your bill that talks about, it defines the term operation, and then it goes through and describes several things. Would that particular ASTM standard tell someone, for example, maximum user capacity by number or weight, other user restrictions, etc.? Is that where you'd go to figure out what those were?
Well, thank you, and David Nordstrom again. Most of the ASTM standard actually points to the manufacturer requirements, which sometimes that's printed on the inflatable, that like max capacity and weight limits. So to answer your question before, in that way it is publicly available, because a lot of times they're pointing to the manufacturer and what they have determined. So they would have a manual. In some cases, it would be printed on the side of the inflatable.
Thank you.
Senator Monroe.
Thank you. I'm not sure what to call you. Welcome back. I have problems with a couple things. One, I've got the standards here right in front of me that I've Googled, actually, X-quicked. And it says the design and manufacturing requirements in Sections 5 and 6 of this standard shall not apply to inflatable amusement devices manufactured before the publication date of this standard practice. That's 11.4 of these standards. Are you happy with grandfathering people in? That's question one. Another follow-up.
We'll let him answer the first one, and then.
Well, how the bill is written, it's the last line of Section 1, or right before the four purposes of this section, it just points to the maintenance and operation of that standard. So design is a part of that, but we're not saying that should be part of the law. But if it makes the committee more comfortable to make sure it's clear to grandfather and existing inflatables, once again, I'm fine with that. But I don't think it is necessary, because it only points to the maintenance and operation.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, we got towns that are below 150,000 or below 75,000, where these businesses are trying to get started, keep going, whatever. And this bill will. There are so many standards here that I see. I can't see that they would be able to comply by July. I mean, is it okay with putting these people out of business at risk of a year in jail and $2,000 fine? I don't understand the suddenness of it and the impact of it on these people. I'm going to start rambling, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Was there a question?
Yeah.
Any additional questions from the committee? The other Senator Nostrum. Well, if there are no other questions, then we'll move to that. Senator Curd does have a question first, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a question about the wording in lines 6 and 7 and 8, actually. And it may be just that it's awkwardly worded, but it makes it confusing. As it talks about a device meeting standards, which I think is appropriate, but then it also, it's the device that's supposed to meet somehow operational requirements, and those are things like placement, how many people are there, and so on. It seems like it's awkward wording to me. The person operating on it ought to be the one that is deciding placement, how many people are there to supervise, and so on. I think it's awkward to understand. I think I understand the intent, but the wording makes it unclear whether it's the device that's supposed to meet the operational parts or the people that are supposed to meet it because of the wording that's here. So I'm not sure it's clear to me how it gets put into statute so that people are compliant with it. And if you'd allow me to elaborate, you could say the device meets all these requirements and then just set it up and there might not be anyone there because the device is supposed to be doing the operation part the way this reads. So I don't know how that would ever functionally be accomplished by someone. I don't know who should answer that, whether it's Mr. Nostrup or looks like you're sponsor is not here, so I guess it's up to
it
you.
It is. It's only Mr. Nostrup.
I get what you're saying. Trying to figure out a way to address it. And the standard talks about owners and operators. So,
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, I guess my question, it seems like this needs a statement in there somewhere that says and must be operated in accordance with that. That's what I think it's missing somehow in this milieu of verbiage in the first section. I think that part for me is missing. I'm going to have a tough time supporting it without some kind of clarification on that. So I don't know if we should maybe consider at some point when it's appropriate for committee action to kind of chill on this for a bit and maybe look at the language again with some drafting corrections and maybe an amendment and then maybe revisit it quickly if the chairman and the committee are so inclined. But I think it's today, to me, it seems awkwardly worded, and I don't know how we would make it functionally satisfactory in statute.
Okay. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. In Section 2, it talks about training to manage and monitor the activities on or around the device. It talks about attendance in sufficient number. My understanding of the way this is written, where are those requirements at? What training do these people have to go to? How many people need to be there? And my question is, who all is subject to the first class misdemeanor? By the way the bill's written, it would indicate any and all the people, whether it's the owner, the person that leases it, and the persons that are involved in attending and managing the device. If they don't have the training, they'd be subject to class one misdemeanor. Where is it at? What training they have to attend? Can you tell us where that's at?
Well, thank you, David Nordstrom. The training would be what the manufacturer would specify, and the training isn't complicated. I mean, it's reading the manual or reading the regulations or the rules on the side of the inflatable saying max people are 10 or whatever it is. So I think if I had an inflatable and I could bring it to your house, I think I could say, hey, make sure you don't have more than 10 people here. Make sure you don't have adults jumping with kids. Make sure these mats stay there. I think you could train somebody fairly quickly. as an owner, if I think the first step is reading the manual, but once the owner or the employees of that business, I think they could share that information fairly quickly. And one other thing I want to, if I can, address your question about the leasing. On line 6, it says for public use. So that would address your concern, because if you're having a private event at your house for a birthday party, I wouldn't say that's for public use. But maybe my interpretation of that is different than the committee's, but I think public use help addresses some of your concerns.
Okay, Senator Hofstrup, question.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I'd like to make a motion to amend.
Go ahead.
If you go to page 1, line 5, I would strike for leases. So once again, page 1, line 5, strikes or leases, so therefore this would apply to owns only and not to leasing. In other words, the owner is responsible, not the person who's the customer. And then on page 2, I would strike line 4.
Okay, do we have a second? We'll wait a little bit, let people read. Okay, do we have a second? As not having a second, the motion dies for lack of a second. Is there any other discussion and or action?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jensen.
I move that Senate Bill 95 be sent to the 41st day.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to defer Senate Bill 95 to the 41st day by Senator Jensen, seconded by Senator Nelson. Any discussion of that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly believe that this is well-intended, but again, I think it's one of those not ready for prime time kind of bills. It's actually an overreach of government, and I can just imagine the heavy hand of government coming out and trying to regulate, you know, those soap bubble things that you see at home shows when they have kids, you know, dipping these big hoops in soapy water and afraid that the kids might slip on any soap that's on the floor. I mean, it gets crazy, and I just think this is overreach, so I'm going to oppose it and support the move to the 41st. Thank you.
Any additional comments? Senator Nelstrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having a background also in this area, I understand how important safety is. And what the ASTM standards, I've got a copy here, and maybe we should have done a better job of educating or letting the committee know what the standards say. But what the standards say are pretty straightforward. For example, the biggest problem in the inflatable industry is inflatables that get caught in the wind and they blow away. And we've all seen YouTube videos where they blow a half a mile away and there's a child inside the inflatable when it does that. And so what the ASTM standard says, for example, is inflatable amusement devices should not be used when the wind is in excess of the maximum wind speed specified by the manufacturer. So the manufacturer creates a particular inflatable, and he says, don't put this out in a wind greater than 40 miles an hour. There's no cost to doing that for the operator other than the safety of the child is the issue. So I think we can amend this as it goes through the process. I think it's the concept is good. I think we can make it into a better bill. I do think that the amendment that I had proposed would have made it a better bill. So I'll be voting yes because the intent is to make it more acceptable as we go forward. And we'll have three or four more cracks at it. So I would ask the committees to keep it alive for now or thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any additional comments? Or what?
Would it be appropriate to make a substitute motion?
Certainly would be.
I would move this to the next meeting of this committee, defer it to the next meeting of this committee, and I ask the sponsor to clean up the language and bring back a bill that is actually safety-oriented and in the best interest of the consumers of South Dakota.
Okay, we have a motion from a substitute motion from Senator Nostrup, seconded by Senator Curd, to defer this until the Thursday meeting. Any discussion of that issue or that motion? Okay, we'll let the secretary call the roll.
Senator Curd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Monroe.
No.
Nelson.
Nay.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Jensen?
No.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Four ayes, three nays.
Okay, we'll give you one more shot at it. Okay, the next bill on the agenda is Senate Bill 99 to establish certain provisions regarding commercial security deposits. If I can get you to hold just 1 second, Senator. Okay, Senator Nessaba, you've got the microphone.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Stalzer and fellow senators. I'm Reynold Nessaba from District 15, representing downtown and the north end of Sioux Falls. I have bring before you this morning Senate Bill 99, which came to me, was motivated by a concern of a constituent who also happened to be my neighbor at the time, and I think she will be up here shortly to give some proponent testimony. So under Senate Bill 99, within 60 days of termination of a lease, the leaser of a commercial premises should return the security deposit to the tenant or furnish to the tenant a written statement providing the specific reason for withholding a deposit or a portion of that deposit. The leaser can only withhold from deposit the amounts reasonably necessary to the payment of rent or of other funds due to the landlord pursuant to an agreement or to restore the premises to their condition at the commencement of the tenancy, except for ordinary wear and tear. Also, within 90 days after termination of the tenancy, the leaser should provide the lessee with an itemized accounting of any deposit withheld. The bill also provides for a penalty. Failure to comply can lead to a punitive damages of $200. What this bill does is it adds clarity to code. So we have a clear statute when it comes to residential deposits, but statute is silent on this because many times leases of commercial buildings are fully negotiated. But in some cases where there is a security deposit, as my constituent found, there was no grounds for her to be able to go and pursue legal action because statute was silent on that. So I would step aside I'll remain to answer any further questions, but I know there is at least one other proponent testimony.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have additional proponent testimony? Good morning. Please introduce yourself and then go ahead. Turn your microphone on, please.
My name is Catherine Henning. I live in the Baltic area. At the time, I lived in District 15, and Mr. Nessaba was right out my window, so I approached him about this bill. I had been renting some commercial space for a few years, and when I moved out, there was a little bit of disorganization with the property manager, and at the same time, he was leaving because of that disorganization, and the others were left with not much information. At the time, I didn't know that, so I kept hearing, we'll get this to you in a few weeks. And a few months went by, and a few more months, and I said to the Attorney General's office, the Consumer Protection hotline, I asked, what are my rights here? And the man pointed me to SDCL 43-32-24, which addresses residential lease security deposits, but there was not any code for commercial. And for residential, it is a two-week deadline. So to me, it sounded like there was somewhat of a hole in the law, and I thought, I know how to approach the legislature. We can fix this. So we put together a matching code for commercial, and this one allows 60 days. I talked to lobbyist Krogman. He's with the Multi-Housing Association and also with the South Dakota Realtors. He did not have a problem with it as of yesterday, and I'm assuming, since he's not here, still no problem with it. I was looking for just something reasonable to have a deadline so that I could pursue it if I had needed to, because without any deadline, there wasn't really any grounds for me to say, hey, this deadline is passed. Where's the return deposit? So, with that, I will finish my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there additional proponent testimony? One more time for proponent testimony. Is there any opponent testimony? Okay, last time for opponent testimony. Okay, seeing none, we will dispense with rebuttal and open it to, we will not have rebuttal since we didn't have it. And we'll open to committee questions. Senator Monroe. Okay, seeing no questions, we will open it to a committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kennedy.
I move do pass.
We have a do pass motion from Senator Kennedy, seconded by Senator Monroe. Any discussion of that motion? Go ahead, Senator Kennedy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm well acquainted with 43-32-24, which is the existing law that requires landlords of residential premises to return security deposits within a period of time or provide a written explanation of why the security deposit isn't being returned. Senate Bill 99 basically parallels what already exists but applies it to commercial property. I think it's a fair and reasonable thing for a tenant to expect within a reasonable period of time, if a security deposit has been made, that it either be returned or there be an explanation of why it's not coming back. So I would encourage you to vote in favor of the due pass motion.
Thank you, Senator Kennedy. Any other committee discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Card?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Novstrup? Jensen?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
6-aye.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brett Aftal with the Division of Banking. So I bring before you House Bill 1033. And as this committee knows, a couple weeks ago we heard Senate Bill 51, which was the kind of the industry piece of the annual trust legislation, and this is the regulatory piece brought by the Department of Labor and Regulation. I mean, I just wanted to give just a brief background. I know you heard some of this on Senate Bill 51, but I just want to make sure we have a clean record on this bill. So going back to 1997, Governor Janklow created the Governor's Trust Task Force. That was carried forward by Governors Rounds, Dugard, and now Governor Noem. And the purpose of that process is to take a look at our laws every year and to keep them up to date and make sure we don't have gaps in our system. The Division of Banking has been involved in that process since 1997, more so since 2006, about the time I came on with the division as legal counsel. The task force is currently chaired by Carl Schmidtman with Dorsey & Whitney Trust Company, and he's here I believe he's going to testify as a proponent on this bill as well. But we communicate with the task force on what they're working on for the trust legislation. I share what ideas we're thinking about working on from the regulatory side so that everyone has an opportunity to weigh in. Then a couple of years ago, the South Dakota Trust Association was started, so you have a formalized group that represents that industry here in the legislature and elsewhere. They've also had an opportunity to weigh in on this legislation. So that long-term cooperative effort has led to where we're at currently. We right now have 97 state chartered trust companies in South Dakota. As of December 31st of 2017, they reported a little $293 billion in assets. Now, we don't have the 2018 numbers yet. We're going through those annual reports right now. It'll be well over $300 billion in assets. We also have 9 of our 45 state charter banks have trust departments, and they reported at the last quarter end $8.2 billion in assets. So it's a sizable industry in our state. Some of you might be wondering, what does a trust company do? I guess my simplest analogy is what a bank does is they take our money in on deposit and they pay us a return for that money, and then they lend that money back out or invest it in securities to earn a return. A trust company, a little bit different, but they do take in assets. They either take custody of assets or actual ownership of assets and manage those for the benefit of someone else. So they perform various roles depending on the specific trust document or the business model of that particular company. So of our 97 trust companies, 58 served the public at large, and 39 of those were established to represent or serve one particular family or family group. Obviously, along with all this growth, there is risk there. So over the years, we developed an internal resolution fund. We formalized that a couple of years ago with the creation of a captive insurance company to cover just the risk of the cost of resolving a company that failed. So far, we've not had to use that, and I hope we can go a very long time without needing to. But that's a cost that's paid by the industry. The 97 trust companies and 9 bank trust departments we have employ over 325 full-time employees in South Dakota. And they also pay, in the fiscal year 2018, paid $1.4 million to our office to pay for our staffing, training, travel, all of our overhead costs. And then they paid in $2.4 million into the state general fund through the bank franchise tax. So with that background in place, I want to walk through the bill with you just to touch on what the bill actually does. Section 1 is just a clarification to make sure our definitions of what capital is at the point of formation, deleting out the reference to undivided profits. Section 2 would provide the director and the division additional flexibility to increase the cash pledge of a public trust company if a company is showing risk tendencies outside of the norm. And really, that cash pledge is made by each company, and one of the purposes for that money is to provide for the cost of a resolution if a company fails. So that's kind of the first line of defense. along with the insurance they have and the bonding they put up. But that's cash in the bank, in a bank in South Dakota that can't be released unless the Division of Banking signs off on that. Say a company voluntarily liquidates down the road, we will hold on to that pledge for 6 months to make sure there are no account holder claims or other issues, and then we'll go ahead and release that. Section 3 streamlines the process for a trust company to retire preferred stock. Preferred stock is just a way for a company to raise capital without diluting the vote of the other shares of stock. Right now we have a quirk in that where they'd have to replace any preferred stock with common stock. So it has led to the result of companies not being able to retire preferred stock. Then Sections 4 and 5 do some work to clean up and provide some more flexibility for companies to issue dividends out of their surplus capital account. But as with Section 3, in these last two sections, our office would be involved. They'd essentially apply to us, lay out their case for either that retirement of preferred stock or that dividend out of surplus capital, and we would have to approve that before that could occur. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll step aside for questions, but urge your support on House Bill 1033.
Thank you. Do we have additional proponent testimony? Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Carl Schmidtman. I am the chair of the Governor's Trust Task Force in South Dakota. I'm also the president of the Dorsey & Whitney Trust Company. The task force, as Director Afdahl mentioned, maintains a very good relationship and line of communication with the Division of Banking. We were given the opportunity to review and provide comments on the proposed changes in House Bill 1033. We support the changes. We support House Bill 1033, and we ask for your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there additional proponent testimony? Good. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. Quoting Yogi Berra, it's deja vu all over again. You just heard from the trust industry 2 weeks ago in support of Senate Bill 51, which represented the trust industry piece of legislation relating to the trust code. And today you're considering HB 1033, which is the regulatory piece, as Director Afdahl explained, regarding regulation of trust companies in South Dakota. And I'm an attorney, Pat Getzinger, from Rapid City, South Dakota. As part of my practice, I work with trust companies on a frequent basis in complying with the regulations set forth in state and federal law. I'm also a member of the Board of Directors of the South Dakota Trust Association and a member of the Trust Task Force. And I think it's important for you to hear from those in the industry that work with trust companies on a regular basis and hear their support of this legislation, which regulates those trust companies. And it's also important for you to hear about the good work being done by the division to firmly but fairly regulate those trust companies in South Dakota. So I would conclude by saying this is a good bill and would urge your support of HB 1033. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponent testimony. Again, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tara Fisher. I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Trust Association. We stand in favor of HB 1033 and would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional proponent testimony? Okay, seeing none, is there opponent testimony? Okay, one more time for opponent testimony. Again, seeing none, we will dispense with rebuttal and move to committee questions. Seeing no committee questions, we will move to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jensen.
Move to pass House Bill 1033.
Okay, we have a motion to pass. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second by Senator Nelson. Any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, we'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Curd?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nostrup?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
7-aye.
Having received a majority vote, House Bill 1033, an act to revise provisions regarding transactions of businesses by trust companies, is hereby passed. Okay, seeing no other action on that, is there any other business from anyone on the committee? Okay, we'll remind everyone to please leave your binders, and we will look for a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion by Senator Kennedy, seconded by Senator Jensen. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.